Hey, it's Friday. Gearing up, people. Thanks very much for being out there. Thanks a lot for tuning in. We appreciate you. We appreciate all the listening that you've been doing while there's not been a lot of sports going on, but we are just at that point where it is starting to happen. It's all starting to happen. We are now 3 days away from LAFC versus the Houston Dynamos. Less than 2 weeks now until opening day at Dodger Stadium, Dodgers versus Giants, 13 days away. And we are 20 days away from the start of the NBA resumption with the Lakers versus the Clippers, just 20 days away. It's here. It's coming. It's on its way. It's around the corner. It's up the street. John?
Is that the end of your rant?
That's what I got. I expected you to jump in at some point.
Yeah, it was. It was kind of, you ended mid-thought. Well,
I did. I was waiting for somebody to chime in.
Well, it is if you don't believe guys like Buster Olney.
I don't.
And Paul Feinbaum.
Well, college football is a different category, but go ahead.
But Paul Feinbaum said this morning that he says that he doesn't think, he thinks 0% chance college football starts on time and not much more of a chance that it finishes. Buster was on our show this week saying 30% chance baseball starts on time, 0% chance it finishes. The one thing that people seem to have consensus on is that this NBA thing is at least going to get off the ground. Now, we don't know what it'll look like when it does.
Right.
But that it will get off the ground. And we, you know, this the TBT's been going on this week, the basketball tournament. And it seems to be going off without a hitch. And
by the way, I don't know what that is. What is that? Who's playing? I see it on here.
It's anybody who's not in the NBA is eligible. And it's $1 million to the winner. So you put together a team, you enter the tournament, and you see how far you can go. The interesting thing they do is they do a thing called the Elam ending.
Yep.
So they end on a number. So I was watching this game today. It was 82. So the first team to 82 wins. The way they determine that is in the first quarter, they basically take whatever your score is near the end of the first quarter and quadruple it, and that's what you play to. So in this game, one team was ahead like 80 to 60, and they couldn't close. They couldn't put the game away. The other team scored 16 unanswered points. I'm not sure the Elam ending isn't a good idea.
It
maybe not turn it off.
Yeah, no, it's kind of cool. Hey, what time do we have Andrew Friedman coming on from the Dodgers?
3:45.
Okay, so that's coming up for you 45 minutes from right now, actually a little less. From right now. And I'm excited to talk some Dodgers. Dodgers intra-squad games continue to go on at Dodger Stadium. It's coming close. It's coming close. And you know what? I understand it's tempting to entertain some of these premises. It's tempting to say, oh, yeah, but baseball's probably not going to finish. I don't think we know exactly what it's going to look like. It's tempting to say the NBA, the bubble at some point will burst. I don't think we know what that's going to look like. I don't think we can make those assumptions. Because the one thing we've learned from this COVID-19 crisis is those who assume are generally wrong. Every assumption has been wrong. I mean, we were supposed to be over this by now, and now it seems to be ramping up again. But I do have faith that baseball and the NBA are both going to happen. I have faith.
Lindsay just texted me that said Friedman is at 3:30.
That's what I thought. I thought it was 3:30 originally.
Yesterday I thought the thing. Okay, so let's break because we can get back on time. We'll have Andrew Friedman in 20 minutes.
Yep. And coming up next, what Paul Feinbaum said about college football a little bit earlier this morning. That's coming up next for you, Mason and Ireland, 710 ESPN. All right, Dodgers President of Baseball Operations Andrew Friedman will be with us at 3:30 today. John mentioned this a little bit earlier. Paul Feinbaum was on the get-up this morning and talking about the sketchiness now of college football. There's been a lot of talk in just the last few days. The Ivy League has canceled its fall football schedule. The Big Ten says they're going to play only a conference schedule. They're not going to play out of conference. Here's Paul Feinbaum on whether there's a reason for there to even have college football this year.
This is a game of survival of the fittest. So Kevin Warren doesn't really care what's going on at Western Kentucky or anywhere else. He's trying to survive. And one thing I would like to hear Kevin Warren or Greg Sankey or any of these commissioners say to you or me or anyone else, forget talking about whether we will play a college football season. Give us a reason why you should play a college football season. Tell us why it's worth all this effort. By the way, you're not allowed to say, if we don't play, we'll go broke. That's what this is about. This is a money grab, because I think if money was not an issue, some of these decisions would have already been made, like what they did up in the Ivy League. But right now, this is a house of cards. And, whether Joey thinks we're being negative or not, he did say one thing that was accurate. The numbers are spiking all over the country, especially in the South, in Florida. You can just look up and down the news channels for this. Mm-hmm. And it's a serious, serious problem.
I want to get to this point for each of you. If you were to put a percentage chance,
actually,
Paul,
go ahead,
start
and cut
with you,
that bunch.
On whether
cut,
the
cut
college.
The question he raised, which is a good one, is give us a reason why you should have a college football season. And he said, take money off the table.
Well, you can't, because it's
correct. It is money.
It's a prominent part of it, but it's more than money. I'll take on his argument. I'll give you a reason.
Yeah, give us a reason.
Stanford yesterday canceled 11 varsity sports,
correct,
men and women. There are athletic departments that depend on this revenue to exist. So what the reason I would give Paul Feinbaum for trying to play, and I'm not saying it's going to work, but trying to play is simply, if you take those 11 sports, and it was everything from rowing to men's volleyball to women's field hockey to, okay, so I'm assuming all those kids or a large amount of those kids were on scholarship to go to Stanford, one of the great schools in the country. I think those scholarships now go away, and if they don't go away this year, they go away next year. And so a kid whose dream is, who's a freshman in high school right now, whose dream was to go to Stanford on a volleyball scholarship, that dream's dead. The reason you play is the sustainability of college athletics. Mace, you went to school at Bowling Green.
Yes, Bowling Green's had all kinds of problems.
I know nothing about the finances of Bowling Green, but I would imagine they have a game or two on their schedule where they're playing a Power 5 conference team.
State game. They have a game at Columbus against Ohio State.
Perfect example. The money they get for basically agreeing to be the Washington Generals to get their heads kicked in is probably close to $1 million, maybe even over $1 million. That money goes straight to pay for girls' field hockey and men's volleyball and all those sports that don't bring in any revenue. So I would counter with Paul. I would counter Paul Feinbaum's argument by saying this: if you want to be the most medically cautious you can be, and say don't even try, shut it all down, that's a legitimate medical argument. But if you try to play and you figure out a way that football or basketball can exist, you open the door for all of the other sports. That's why it's important. That's
right.
Why it's significant. And by the way, Mace, you can't say, Paul Weinbaum said, you can't say it's because you'll go broke. Paul, it's not because you will go broke. They are broke. We've been in a pandemic for 4 months. They shut down March Madness. These athletic departments have no money. 80% of restaurants are going under. The economy is in free fall. So I'm not going to criticize anybody who tries to play. If somebody gets seriously ill, or God forbid somebody dies, obviously you have to shut it down. But Mace, we have no guarantees that the COVID situation is going to be any better in 6 months than it is now. We don't have any answers. So
yeah.
My answer to him is, you try, and that's all you're doing. You try and play these games because the athletic departments of most universities need it to survive. And if not, go ahead and just get rid of all those sports.
Yeah, I mean, I think what we're seeing is the recognition by conference commissioners, by athletic directors, by coaches, that it's probably not going to work. Like, despite I'm confident about baseball, I'm confident about the NBA, I'm not confident at all about college football. And
are you
the
any
NFL,
more confident about the NFL?
I
was just
I mean, the NFL, I think, is in the same boat. You can make the case that because they're professional athletes as opposed to kids who are on scholarship, that there's an eyes wide open risk that goes along with being a professional athlete. I think yesterday J.J. Watt said he's not going to play. If there's a face mask, he's not going to play.
Right. Yeah, he did say that. But Mace, think about this. Stanford is a private university that has an endowment. They have loads of money, but they looked at the big picture and said, we can't rob Peter to pay Paul here. We can't take money from the endowment to support these sports. We're just going to shut them down. If Stanford had to gut 11 varsity sports, what's Oregon State going to do? What's your alma mater, Bowling Green, going to do? What's
They already axed baseball.
Right, and baseball is probably just the beginning.
Oral Hershiser played baseball at Bowling Green. Yeah, they axed the program.
Rob Blake played hockey at Bowling Green.
Exactly. Now, hockey's a gigantic sport at Bowling Green. That one will be saved. But yeah, to cut baseball, college baseball, man, is the lifeblood of Major League Baseball. And it takes away a lot of opportunities. Yeah, I mean, I...
Well, and Mace, think about this. Okay, college, one of the questions I'm going to ask Andrew Friedman, who's going to join us in 7 or 8 minutes, is... One of Andrew's main jobs is player development. He needs to worry about who's going to play the infield and the outfield 5 years from now.
Sure.
So if he's got a young player, a guy like Will Smith or Gavin Lux, and that young player is struggling, normally what you could do is send him down to AAA, get him some at-bats, let him find his stroke, and bring him back up. But now there's no minor leagues. So college baseball has never been more important. College baseball is the only minor league system that exists because the minor leagues were scuttled because of the pandemic.
Right.
And now schools are canceling college baseball. So going back to your original question to Paul Feinbaum, who seems to be dying on the moral hill of this is medically unsafe. It might be, Paul. It might be. But I have no problem with these guys trying, because if they succeed, it's the reward is you save athletic departments all over the country.
Well, and
I
know
kids can't afford to go to these schools unless they get a scholarship.
And I know it makes it sound unimportant. But, you know, I talked to my mother today. And my mom is like, I am so bored. And, you know, it's the truth for so many people. I mean, there are people that are out of work, that are at home. There are people that can't work because their businesses are shut down or they're telecommuting, all that kind of stuff. You know, the world deserves, and hopefully it works, some entertainment. The world deserves some entertainment. People need it. People need something to look forward to on a day-to-day basis.
And let me say this. You could easily, of course, in a global pandemic, sports aren't absolutely 100% essential, but they can help.
And yeah,
Adam Silver said this is what we do. We want to try and do it.
Yeah, sports will keep people indoors. It keeps them from going outside and potentially risk contracting or passing along the virus. It gives us something to do at home. It's a safe activity. So I know entertainment doesn't seem like it's worth risk, but this amount of risk, I get it, because it's for the betterment of the whole country that these sports are going to be played.
And let me say this about the college sports. I would, if you've been listening to the show last couple of weeks, you know that my position is on anybody who opts out of the bubble. Anybody like Buster Posey did it today. Anybody who opts out, David Price, Buster Posey, Trevor Ariza, Avery Bradley, I think that is 100% within your rights. And if you do it, you should not be punished for it. And I would say the same thing about any college athlete that felt that way, that felt like, hey, I'm not getting paid. I'm not putting my health at risk to try this. If your heart's not in it, you should be able to opt out and you should be able to keep your scholarship. And I hope that's the case.
Yeah. All right. Coming up next for you is the president of baseball operations for the Los Angeles Dodgers, Andrew Friedman. Mason and Ireland, 710 ESPN. 710 ESPN, Mason and Ireland, any moment. Andrew Friedman, president of baseball operations for the Los Angeles Dodgers. They've been doing intra-squad games out at Dodger Stadium. Got a chance to dip into a couple of those games on Sportsnet LA. If you have yet to see Sportsnet LA, fantastic programming. Actually, when I tuned in one night, John Hartung was doing the play-by-play from back in the studio.
Well, there, I haven't talked to Tim Nevert or Joe Davis in a while, but I don't know if they're going to be at the games or not. I know Michael and I aren't. We're going to be in at LA Live doing the Laker games, so you may see a lot more of that, guys doing games from studios. Matter of fact, I know you don't get up super early, but
no,
I do, and all of the Korean baseball,
yeah,
everybody's been in their house. Boog Shambi's been in his house. Carl Ravitch has been in his house. Jessica Mendoza's been in her house. They just set them up with home studios. And you really, once the games start and you're watching the games, you really forget about that.
By the way, and isn't that our best hope for baseball, is that it's working in South Korea? Now, granted, South Korea has done a way better job with coronavirus than we have in the U.S. Because everybody wore their masks. And it's they literally have got like 30 or 40 cases a day. It's down to those numbers where we've got, I don't know, 7 or 8,000 cases a day. But it has shown to work in Korea, in South Korea.
Right. Well, not only that, I think even more encouraging, you mentioned that at least a couple of times, and there's another one tonight, you've been watching the Dodgers inter-squad games.
Yes.
And they've been working. And let's face it, Mace, it's not going to be that much different when they bring another team in. It's just, you know, what I'm most worried about, if I was somebody that worked in baseball, is what happens when they go from city to city.
Right.
I think once they get inside the stadium and they get tested and you know, they follow the rules, that it's going to look a lot like South Korea and a lot like those exhibition games you've been watching. As long as those are going well, I think it's very encouraging for baseball. What worries me is, okay, so now, for example, the Giants are coming in to play the Dodgers on the opening weekend, and then
yes,
the Dodgers go to Houston. I'm a Dodger fan, so what I'm rooting for is that nobody picks anything up when they go to the plane, they go to the hotel, they go to the Astros ballpark. Once they get in the ballpark, I feel pretty good about it. It's the in between that worries me a little bit.
They, you know, they did a bunch of testing in Major League Baseball, both staff and players. And last week, 58 players of over 800 tested positive. So,
do you know what percentage that is?
15.
It sounds even less than that.
It's a 15%. Well, you know what? It's a 15% positivity rate. That's what they had last week. So round numbers, I know it's 15%. They may have tested a bunch of people the week before, for all I know. But 15% positivity seems like it's something you can manage around. Now, whenever we say positivity, I mean, it means, like Freddie Freeman is finding out right now, it means you get real sick.
Right, but I've been reading a lot about all these cases in the SEC with these college football players.
Yes.
The overwhelming majority of them have been asymptomatic. In other words, they never got sick, but they tested positive for the virus. So, you know, the Freddie Freeman is the case you worry about, but in a lot of cases, you'll test positive for the virus, you'll get better, and you'll quarantine, and then you can come back. So, they, you know, managing the virus is part of this, too. Like, just because somebody tests positive doesn't mean that that person's not eventually going to get better and come back.
Right. The tricky part of it is, even when you're asymptomatic now, after this new research is in, you can be like a super spreader. You can spread it everywhere you go.
Which is why you have to quarantine.
Exactly.
But they're getting tested left, right, and sideways. And, you know, by the way, somebody just, one of our listeners, Jeff, sent me a tweet saying, Ireland, would you feel differently about restarting college football if your son was on a team? Jeff, what I would say is I would leave it up to my son as to whether or not he wanted to play. You don't stop being a parent ever. So all these NFL guys, even these players that are being paid, their parents are still having conversations with them. Do you want to go into the bubble? Is it safe? Is this the smartest thing to do? Which I will pivot back to. Anybody who wants out,
yeah,
like Buster Posey today, wants out. Buster Posey has twins. He's in the process of adopting a second set of twins. You're dealing.
They're in the natal ICU unit.
Right. It just doesn't make sense for a guy like that.
It's a no-brainer. Of course you don't go.
That's why I think Mike Trout probably doesn't go. And I have zero problem with that.
Yeah, no, not at all. Not at all. It is a personal decision. You are risking getting sick.
And if you don't want
to risk it. At the end of the day, that's what you're risking.
Yeah, if you don't want to risk it, I completely respect that. What I would argue on the other side is, if these respective sports want to try and figure out a way to navigate playing in the COVID era, I'm not going to tell them that that's crazy. I think that you should try. You may fail. The whole thing may get called off. And if you do, you can at least say, we did everything within our power to save our people. I mean, Mace, do you know how many people are out of work?
Oh, it's unbelievable.
I mean,
like another million filed this week.
Right. You know, so anybody who's trying to save their industry, I'm not going to fault them for that. I'm not going to criticize them and say, you're being medically unsafe. You need to, you know, best you can, practice social distancing. Best you can, create rules and an ecosystem that protects your guys. But if you want to try it and see if you can navigate it, I'm for that because, again, we don't know that it's not going to be this way in 2021. There's still no virus.
By the way,
there's still no vaccine.
I just happened to look up unemployment numbers. Do you know California's our unemployment number is 16.3%?
Yeah, I mean we're heading towards like Depression era numbers when it was 24%.
Yeah, I mean that is just crazy. I mean, for everybody out there who's struggling and scuffling and you know,
So it's a very hard time. But any sport that wants to try the best they can to play in the COVID era, and I say, you know, good luck, and I'm
rooting especially for you. Baseball.
Rooting for you. Joining us right now is the president of baseball operations of the Los Angeles Dodgers. We haven't had a chance to talk to him in a while. Andrew Friedman. Andrew, great to talk
Thanks,
to you,
Andrew.
Man. How you holding up?
I'm doing well, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Let me start there. You had the situation in your backyard with David Price. The Giants and your friend Farhan Zaidi had it today with Buster Posey. If a player comes to you and says, for whatever reason, I don't feel comfortable playing in the COVID era, Andrew, do you try and talk them through it? Do you try and talk them out of it? Do you just say from the beginning, I understand it? Or what's your attitude as a president of a team when a player comes to you with that mindset?
I mean, first and foremost, I think it is an incredibly like personal decision where there's no real right or wrong answer. It's totally personal, and different people are kind of internalizing all of this a little bit differently. As you noted, you know, went through it with David and, you know, I talked to him a decent amount over the last couple months and, you know, you could tell it was really front of mind for him and impacting him in ways that were a little different than others. And, you know, just tried to share information as much as we had. And, you know, when we got to the point of, you know, things were a go, you know, he drove here and was of the mind to do it. And I think in large part because of his teammates and, you know, those bonds that were kind of created even over a short time in spring training. But just got to the point where he wasn't comfortable and we respect that. And, you know, again, it's just such a personal decision that's kind of our role in it is to be supportive and answer questions and share information.
Andrew, you know, I've been dipping into the games, the intra-squad games. How closely can an intra-squad game simulate an actual exhibition game that you would have during spring training?
It's a good question. Obviously, someone in a different uniform definitely helps. And even some crowd interaction and noise. And, you know, it's been fun with the guys and trash talking and, you know, we're trying to come up with ideas and ways to continue to make it more fun. And then we're going to have three exhibitions near the end of camp. But, You know, I think in large part our pitchers are in a really good spot right now. You know, it's a credit to our performance group and our pitching coaches and our trainers and just everyone just staying really connected during the time off. And so our guys are in a really good spot. For our position players, just being in spikes and being on their feet for 6, 7, 8 innings is something different and unusual and things you don't really do when you're working out and, you know, sprinting and stopping and coming back the next day and playing. You know, those are things that we're able to put our guys through right now, which definitely helps, and helps in just conditioning the legs and just reducing the chance of soft tissue injuries once we get going. You know, obviously we've got, you know, the virus and it's pretty all-consuming with everything going on and the protocols, but you also have other injuries that we're all more accustomed to in baseball that, you know, we're also trying to do everything we can to put our guys in the best position to not suffer from those. And so I think from a rep standpoint and building up legs and conditioning and getting guys ready for the season, I think it's good. It just can't be the same intensity, and that's a hard thing to, you know, to manufacture without it being a different team.
We're talking to Andrew Friedman, president of the Dodgers. Andrew, you mentioned the pitchers. What should fans expect early in the season with pitchers? You talked about how your guys have done a good job of ramping up. But normally, if this was a normal season, and of course nothing's normal, but if they were pitching in spring training games, guys like Walker Buehler and Clayton Kershaw would only pitch 3 or 4 innings, maybe 5, and then check out, regardless of how they were playing. But now you're in a 60-game sprint where every game's important. If Buehler or Kershaw, and I'm just using them as examples, if they're throwing a one-hitter or a no-hitter after 4 or 5 innings, do you lean towards leaving them out there and riding them, or do you say early in the season, no matter what, we got to take those guys out?
I mean, it's something for me that I, you know, from a fan perspective, I think the no-hitter is awesome and great. Wearing the hat I wear, their health is way more important to me.
Right.
And so I guess it just gets to, you know, how built up someone is. And, you know, our starters are going to be at kind of varying degrees of build up when we start the year. You know, I imagine some will be close to 100 pitches and others might be closer to 60. And we'll just kind of balance that out with the order in which we kind of put them 1 through 5 and also how we balance that with our pen. And we start the season for the first 14 days. With a 30-man roster. So we'll be able to have more pitchers than we typically would, which will help us get through it. But so much of it will fall out of kind of where our guys are at that point, which is what we're kind of methodically working through right now.
Andrew, 5 teams in the last week or so, I guess over the long holiday weekend, didn't get their test results on time. A's, Nats, Cubs, a couple others. How has the testing process been for the Dodgers, and how often are guys actually being tested?
Yeah, obviously I read that stuff as well, and we've been really fortunate. We really haven't had that, and guys are getting tested every 2 days. And Ron Porterfield, who's our medical director and is kind of running point on this stuff, has been unbelievable with all the moving parts and all the balls in the air. And he's done an awesome job of handling the logistics, but also just conveying stuff to our players. And so much of this is about perspective. You know, this is a humongous undertaking and something that's totally unprecedented. And so I think we have to expect that there are going to be some, you know, bumps along the way, and it's about solving problems. And, you know, a lot of that credit goes to our players. Just their mindset is, hey, let's just take whatever happens. Let's all just stay connected and communicating and stay nimble, and things are going to happen that are going to change things. And all we can do is kind of stay together and share information and, you know, work together to get through this. And I think part of that just gets back to spring training and just the confidence and the excitement that our guys had to go out and play the 2020 season. And then when you take it away for 4 months, I think it made these guys even hungrier. And so our guys are in an awesome headspace and really excited about going out and competing and trying to win a championship.
We're talking to Andrew Friedman, president of the Dodgers. Andrew, you are you guys have this situation, I think every team's going to have it, where you've got some really promising young players. On your roster, you have guys like Will Smith, guys like Gavin Lux. By the way, we're told Gavin Lux is going to play in the inter-squad game, is back in camp, so that's good news for Dodger fans. But if one of those young guys struggles, Andrew, in a normal year, you would have the option, well, we can send him down to the minors and have him get his stroke right and then bring him back up. But now in games that count, what's your attitude about young players? And if a young player is struggling, can you afford to let him work through it on the major league level?
Yeah, it's a good question. And as important as every regular season game has been in the past, obviously it's worth three times as much now.
Yeah.
So there is definitely, you know, more urgency. I think so much gets to what's your alternative, and, you know, trying to identify the reasons that a guy is struggling and whether he needs that blow to get away from the pressure of the major league environment for a little bit just to exhale, or if he just needs a pat on the back and reassurance that he's going to be fine. And that's part of our job, is to try to figure that out, and try to just put our guys in the best position to succeed while also trying to win as many games as we can.
Let me follow up on that. John referenced Will Smith and Gavin Lux. You've also got Edwin Rios in camp. I saw him hit a moonshot the other night. What roles do you foresee for those three guys?
Yeah, I don't know yet. I mean, so much is going to come down to, you know, how conditioned are our position players, and are they ready to go from jump street and play every day, or do we want to mix in off days? Do we want to mix in and rotate the DH spot to get guys, you know, kind of a half blow? And that's stuff that we're going to still continue to kind of wrap our arms around. For us right now, it's about just having as many talented players as we can and then let things kind of play out as we go. You know, the DH coming online in 2020, we feel like is a huge benefit to us. No offense to our pitchers, but we don't have the most gifted offensive pitchers. But, you know, we do have some really good hitters that would have been on the bench. And so to get one of those guys in our lineup every day is a huge advantage for us.
Talking to Andrew Friedman. Andrew, there was a weird story the other day where Max Muncy said that he didn't see the baseball. And I know they just did a $100 million renovation at Dodger Stadium. And it's just one player. I mean, everybody's learning how to hit and hurting. When you hear a story like that, are you tempted to immediately get into it and go talk to the hitters and say, hey, is the backdrop bothering you? Or do you just write it off as kind of a fluky thing that happened to one guy when you heard that Max didn't see the ball clearly?
No, I think you have to have the conversation. And I tell you, the outfield renovation turned out incredibly well. And it's funny because I guess it's the hallmark of, like, great construction and design in that I can't even remember what it looked like before.
Wow.
Like, it just
yeah.
looks natural yeah. and that it's just been there. And so whenever you change things, especially for offense, you know, especially for our hitters who are accustomed to something, you know, change is hard. And it takes a little bit to get used to. And so we wanted to, you know, get our hitters in here and get some feedback, some real-life feedback of, you know, pitchers really trying to execute pitches with them in the batter's box, because that gives you the best feedback. And so we're collecting information. You know, we expected that there was going to be something that would come up that you can't really know in the design phase without, you know, getting the ground truth of people who are kind of living it every day. And so we're doing that, and, you know, we're going to make some alterations here and there. And, you know, Janet Marie Smith, you know, kind of driving the train on the center field renovation project, has done an amazing job and also is really good about staying in lockstep with baseball operations. And so, you know, we're kind of collecting that and figuring out little tweaks here and there that give our hitters a little bit more comfort. But that being said, it's also just different. And so that's going to take a little bit to get used to as well.
Andrew, I have said a million times, talking about baseball, it's a marathon, not a sprint. I know that's that most baseball executives have said the same thing. Your philosophy is very much based on getting edges over a long sample size, in a big sample size. How does your approach change coming into this year when there are just 60 games?
I tell you, it's not that different. As much as we try to get an edge over a large sample size, the way we do it is by trying to get an edge in each and every game. And so that's not really going to change. There are others who I think will sit back on their heels a little bit more and just expect things to kind of work itself out, you know, over the course of 162 games. Our mentality's been a little bit different. We've been more aggressive to even make a move for a day on the, you know, whatever, small percent chance that that move could help us win a game that night. That's kind of been our mentality throughout, and I think, you know, obviously we'll continue it this year, but it will be even more impactful than it's been in the past.
Andrew Friedman with us. Andrew, what's Dodger Stadium like with no fans? How strange is that for you?
It's really strange. It's strange in that, you know, the 50,000 fans that are here every game, you know, not only, and obviously I'm really biased, but in my opinion, what is like the most beautiful ballpark that is full with people everywhere and making noise. Like, I think it's part of why we've had such a great home record. Obviously, our talent's been pretty good as well.
Right, but I agree with you.
But it's definitely different. It's going to take some getting used to. You know, it's weird to be able to, you know, be sitting in the stands watching a game and hear the first baseman sneeze and say, "Hey, bless you."
Right.
That's going to take some getting used to.
Do you feel like right now, Andrew, you've got a five-man starting rotation? I mean, Kershaw, Buehler, Urias, how do you see it stacking up?
Yeah, I'm not sure yet, but, I mean, we have seven or eight guys that we feel really good about, and obviously all Strip ever does is put himself in a great position to earn a spot. You know, Julio, who, you know, we feel like the upside is tremendous. D-May, who we got to see some last year, and him come on, burst on the scene last year. Tony Gonsolin, how he handled himself. You know, obviously with Alex Wood and Buehler and Kersh. You know, we just have a lot of guys now. In the past, depth has always been really important to us, and we feel like that's been something that's really helped us over the course of a season. I don't even know what depth means right now.
Yeah.
In that I'm not exactly sure what, you know, how things are going to play out, but we're just going to have to stay nimble and, you know, adjust on the fly and figure it out. But I do feel really good about the talent that we have in this camp and that we'll be, you know, kind of drawing from as the season goes.
Andrew, last thing for me, when you look at a 60-game schedule, what, I mean, you guys have won, I think, eight straight division titles. What wins the division this year in your head? How many games? 35? Do you got to win 40? What's the number you have in your head, or do you even have a number?
I don't really, but I think what you just threw out is fair. I think 35 to 37, 38. I haven't really thought about it, but I think that's reasonable, fair. It's just obviously there's a lot more variance when you're talking about 60 games, and one team could have an amazing 60-game run.
Sure.
And that 60-game run could, you know, lead somehow to more than 40 wins. It's not that likely, but it's possible. And I think for us, it's just doing everything we can each day to win that night's game and then see where we are, you know, as we get into September.
Last thing for me, at last check, I don't think Kenley Jansen has been in camp for at least not yet. What's his status?
Yeah, I mean, I know Doc has gone through this on a daily basis. Obviously, you know, there's some awkwardness in the communication aspects of this that out of respect to each and every person involved, and, you know, HIPAA laws, et cetera.
Yep.
It's hard to, you know, go into things. And, you know, I think, you know, from our standpoint, you know, we try to be as transparent as we can be. And, you know, there are certain situations where you have to be less so. But I know that our guys who aren't here right now are really excited about getting back. And the guys who are here are anxiously awaiting their arrival. And, you know, it's just kind of the new normal that we're dealing with right now. There's been, you know, each day has become a little bit more normal. Like, so much of the enjoyment factor for me is just the camaraderie of everyone I work with and, you know, everyone downstairs and, you know, trash talking. And it's just different. like there's not a lot, you know, everything is way more efficient, which is great. And it just takes some getting used to. And I think each day it's becoming a little bit more normal on all of these fronts. And I think that's helpful for us as we try to navigate, you know, the next 2.5-3 months.
You anticipate, though, Kenley Jansen will pitch for the Dodgers this year?
I do.
Okay.
Andrew, thank you for doing this, man. We know it's an incredibly weird time. We're excited that it looks like you guys are going to get a chance to play, and we always enjoy having you on. Thanks for doing this.
Absolutely, guys. Thanks for having me on. I always enjoy it as well, and hopefully we can talk some during the season after some big Dodger wins.
Absolutely. We'll be here, man.
All right, stay safe, man. Thanks.
Thanks, guys. You as well.
All right, there's Andrew Friedman of the Dodgers.
I always find him very conversational and fun to go back and forth with.
Me too.
He doesn't duck things, you know?
No.
He'll tell you what he knows, and even like in that last question you asked him, which was a little touchy, he'll say, I can't totally be candid here, but here's, like, read between the lines. We think he's coming in.
Yes.
You know, kind of thing. Hey, the Eagles have spoken on DeSean Jackson.
Oh, okay, good.
We'll tell you what they said coming up.
All right, that's next for you. Mason and Ireland, 710 ESPN.